Four, five.
Good.
Any guesses? This is a story of my life. I feel wonderful. Last night I lost, what do you call these things that stick over a tooth that's almost gone? It fell out, and I was toothless, and I only one damn dentist here. Oklahoma City, we had five dentists. My teeth were in great shape. Anybody gets sick at this convention with seven doctors here, they will treat you free. We have all sorts of specialists. We have an orthopedics man if you break a bone or something. Eye, ear, nose, and throat, general practice. And we have a man who owns the whole hospital. The only problem is you'll have to get to Alabama to go to it. So we're well-equipped medical fraternity. I want to warn you, though, at 6 o'clock on Sunday evening, when this officially ends, their rates go back to full. So get sick before 6 p.m. How many of you are truly newcomers? It's getting more so that way. More and more actual newcomers are coming to the beginner session. And we will give you a complete beginner session. I'd like to introduce some people who I would not allow to be caught dead at a beginner session because they are so advanced. People say, well, why don't you have these people at the beginner session to help teach us? They're so famous and they're so wonderful, and we've heard so much about them. The point is that they would teach you things that are at least 40 steps beyond what you should be getting at a beginner session. They would so hopelessly raise your expectations that you would never want to go through the steps that they individually went to become the winners they are. Some of them won before we met them, they win more now. But my favorite loser of all time is a man who had to bet on every horse in the race in order to stand in the winner's line. He used to go to the track and watch those people go to the winner's window, and he'd get so sad he'd just get drunk. And one day he found out how he could get a winner, and he bet on every horse in the race. And that man today, he used to go around in shabby jeans, shirts all torn, a bit draggled looking. Now today he has his own tailor. Cowboy Drysdale from Tulsa, Oklahoma, does this man's clothes, and he also does mine. My official wardrobe manager, Mr. Jim the Hat Bradshaw.
Hattie. Howard said I could come in and say howdy, and then said, get the heck out. But I did see a lot of hands of beginners, and for you that have been wondering, no, I did not hit the single pick seven ticket at Remington Park. The guy that hit it had a $17,000 ticket. I would not know how to make out a $17,000 ticket. But welcome to Las Vegas, and I hope that we can dazzle you. We're not allowed to tonight, so we'll be seeing you in the next couple of days. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Jimmy. Every organization starts humbly in a little clinic in San Bernardino. Well, it does not achieve much fame on its own. It only can achieve fame by the fame of the people that it attracts. And while we humbly proceeded for years and years, almost totally unrecognized, one man rose to the forefront to make our name headline news. That man is the very famous author who we've importuned to spend a moment with us tonight before he takes his wife off to Treasure Island. And you all know him, you've read his book, I hope. If you haven't, you're in big trouble. Mr. Tom Brohammer. He milks this. You're not supposed to stop applauding until he takes the mic, and then only reluctantly.
Well, I wasn't sure until you said the name of who you were talking about.
Welcome. Or howdy. He's not going to let us say much tonight, that's all right. I'm delighted there's so many newcomers in here, and we're going to have a lot of fun over the next few days. We're going to do a lot of handicapping, and on Sunday I hope we're going to make a lot of money. Quite often we have. Well, we're available during this period. I've already made arrangements to talk with several people privately over the weekend. If you have something bugging you, if you have questions you want answered, I'd be happy to talk with you. During the races, we'll share opinions. This weekend, we're fair game. I mean, once Sunday ends, if you happen to be at the racetrack with any of the people that'll be teaching you, then it's a different ballgame because everybody plays for profit. But for this weekend, if you have any questions on the races, on the concepts, be sure to ask them because we're available and we want to talk to you. Anyway, again, welcome and let's have some fun the next few days.
Ours is a story of opportunity. Ours is a story of persons who were deprived, some of them depraved, but that's another story. There was a man who's grandson of a slave from Arkansas who was raised under very menial conditions, subjugated, but decided he would seek the brass ring. And he wasn't content with brass, he wanted gold. So he took a sojourn in the Navy and raised himself to highest status in the United States Navy, and then when he retired, decided he would handicap for a living. So here he is now in his full regalia, our friend and brother, Mr. Marion Jones.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to come to these seminars. And on a night like this where we have so many newcomers, it gets to really be a little bit more than a pleasure. We really enjoy having new people come in because it gives us something to do a little bit out of the ordinary. When new people come in, we are able to take them by the hand and get them really started in this endeavor. And that's a wonderful feeling. Over the years, we've had a lot of people come in. A lot of them are doing quite well today. I run into them periodically at the track. And they're doing what they had anticipated they would be doing if they stuck with the methodology. So it's really wonderful to have you here. Now, while we're here over the weekend, if you need any information from me, don't be reluctant to come up to talk to me. I'm always willing to talk to you and give you any information that I have. I've been in this business a long time. A long, long time, I'll tell you. And I work at it daily. I don't go to the track every day, but I've still done my work when I don't go because I don't go because I don't find anything that I want to play in that particular day, so that's the days I don't go. But any questions that you have, come up and ask me. I'll work with you. I'll help you in any way I can. And if you need some personal attention, I'll be glad to do it. Thank you.
Vic, whoops.
Are you here, Vic? Vic Palermo? What do you know?
Well, he's here.
I know he's got to be. He's probably not having that cocktail. That cocktail party is not for us, tell those people, will you? Tell them to shut up, too. They're... Spencer does all the dirty work. I'd like to introduce you to a couple of fellows who, just from the floor, they won't come up here, but they've been very instrumental in helping us. These are two people who are winners and who have shared their winning experience with others, especially in translating their handicapping ability into making money. A man who dazzled people with his skills at that subject, Mr. David Barry. Oh, stand up, David. You want to know how to make money, just consult with him. One of the three people who has joined me in the subject of that is really the heart and essence of winning at the races and the psychology of winning is a man who will probably call on Sunday to give us a couple of words. Mr. Phil Gowans. Phil? And as you all know, the man whose heart goes out to all people who are less than apt. Not quite inept, but the friend of the inept or the less than apt, Mr. Spencer Toner. Spencer's really very good. He just pretends to be bad. Just so people will call him and commiserate with him. Then he tells me what you said. He really is a sneak thief. Now, he won't mention your name. I wish Phil were here, but was he at the cocktail party? I mean, Vic.
He was here. I don't see him now.
Yeah. Well, you tell him that he's, that's 12 demerits. Come on in, folks. To paraphrase the Bible, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was wind. 1975, my name was in the phone book as a new practitioner of psychotherapy in San Bernardino, California, and an organization called the Roadrunners, which is a truck driver's benevolent association dedicated to helping truck drivers with alcohol, drug, or gambling problems to retain or get back their driver's licenses when they had been arrested and convicted of felons or high misdemeanors relative to their drinking, narcotics addiction, or gambling. They asked me to address this group. Undoubtedly, their reason for asking me to address this group was twofold. First, I was new and they'd never heard me, and they hooked every therapist in the Yellow Pages. And secondly, they couldn't find anybody to take gamblers. All the practitioners were big on alcoholism, big on narcotics addiction. I said, I don't want to fool with those. In the first place, no self-respecting healing arts professional ever deals with anything he knows anything about. It's all right. A sense of humor is really very essential to this field. So since I knew a little bit about alcohol, having drunk a couple of times, I never had taken any narcotics, but I had seen many of persons who had. So knowing absolutely nothing about gambling and having never gambled, I chose gambling. And they were delighted to have me because nobody else would take the subject of gambling. Why? Because the whole spectrum of addiction is don't do it. Now, wouldn't that be great if every time everything we did we're supposed to not to do, we didn't do it? And what kind of a practitioner says, just don't do it. Abstain. Well, abstaining from alcohol and narcotics is one thing because tissue damage can ensue from consumption and addiction. But there's no real tissue damage inherent in losing and gambling. Or you might have a little stomach problem, a little cardiovascular disorder subsequent to constant losing, but there's no inherent tissue damage. And so I didn't see any reason why I should get up in front of this group of felons and misdemeanor convicts and tell them don't do it. That's all they'd heard all their lives. So I said, hey, let's learn how to win. And that was pretty naive because I never even gambled, much less won. But like I said, you got to dare a little bit. So what we did was we got 39 persons convicted of felons, misdemeanors, or gambling related, and some had alcohol problems and some drug problems to go along with it. And we worked on it and cured their addiction, all except for three of them, 36 out of 39, not too bad a record. Cured their addiction by teaching them, of all things, how to win. I said that the cure for losing is winning. And that cure stands today for all of you. Now, the one nice thing, have you ever, any of you ever been in prison or anything? You know any convicts? Well, don't tell me what I've got. They have a wonderful code, at least they did then. I think the standard, the level of prisoners has gone down considerably in the last 20 years. But they used to be really have a code. Now, if they'd have told the judge that remanded them to me what I was doing, I'd have lost my license and my right to practice because you aren't supposed to do that. You're not supposed to teach people how to win because society says that gambling is evil and all gamblers lose. And the absolute audacity of somebody taking these people and teaching them, trying to teach them how to win through a mutually shared effort would have been considered scandalous and virtually illegal. They never ratted on me. I've had teaching members of this organization who ratted on me, but none of those convicts ever ratted on me. And so they did go on to win, and lo and behold, over half of them gave up gambling altogether once they proved they could do it. One guy, I did tell you a little story about the penitentiary. It's very typical of gamblers. We had this convict, San Quentin, and he had a perfect plan. Hey, Doc, I got the perfect plan. I want to rob this store. And I got a perfect plan. I'm going to rob this store. I'm going to get away with it, and I'm going to prove the perfect crime. He did it, got caught, back he comes. Well, it wasn't the plan that was wrong, Doc. It just happened to be someone was going by, and he had a good excuse every time. So finally, if he does it one more time, he's a multiple-time loser, and he won't ever get out. So when he gets out, we decide he's going to go back, and he's going to try to rob that store. The problem was the store had a little post office in it. And when you rob a store with a post office in it, it becomes a federal offense now. Before, it was just state. But with the new post office in there, he's going to really be in trouble. So my senior psychiatrist, Dr. Donald Powell Wilson, makes a little deal with the storekeeper, and the storekeeper was not about to do this. It took a lot of convincing. He said, let him rob the store. I will make good on anything he takes. Lo and behold, the store gets robbed. The guy does not get caught. 3 months later, in our office in San Quentin, we get a letter from this guy with a package with the exact sum of money that he stole from the store. He said, Doc, I didn't do it for the money. I just wanted to prove that it could be done. I did pull it. I pulled the perfect crime. We never heard from him again, never got in any trouble again. That is what we are seeking in this field. We are seeking the gift of prophecy to make this accomplishment, to prove that we can do what society says is not only immoral, but what society and many of the people within the framework of this handicapping structure say is impossible. We dare to try to achieve that. We seek that goal. If along the way we can make some money, that's not too bad either. With the recession that we've had, it's supposed to be over. Anybody feel it's over? Any show of hands here? They keep saying, oh, it's over. Well, it's not over, and it may not ever be like it was before. The cash flow of yuppie-type jobs may never be upon us again. People getting overpaid. We'll have to supplement our income somewhere, and this is an excellent way to do it. Why do most people lose at the races? Is it because picking winners is difficult? No, it is not. Marion Jones does it. Tom Brohammer does it. I do it. Jim Hat Bradshaw does it. His wife does it. Leroy, where are you? She went with him. She does it. She's only been at it for a few weeks. She's damn near as good as him. Now I want to show you a man who does it. I sat with him at the book, at the Prima Donna at the border out here yesterday, and he won 9 straight races at Hollywood Park. He had 4 horses in his computer and 3 races and 3 in the other 5 or 6. And he won every single race. Won some exactas, won the Daily Double. This man, stand up, Ron Ross. Is there anything about this man that is totally unique and unusual in your eyes? If he can do it, can you not do it? Anybody think they can't do it if he can do it? He's a retired naval man. He has a very lovely and intelligent wife who guides him. And here's a man who just walked in the door. Who does it? Sam Wada. No, you don't have to speak, Sam. Just stand there. Sam Wada does it. He makes his living doing it. He's a retired IBM executive. Were you really an executive, or do I were you just a plain worker?
Xerox.
Whatever he was, he makes his living handicapped. David Barrios does it. David's retiring from his job. Stand up again, David. I just want to. These are not 10 feet tall people. These are not people wearing tuxedos and flowers. They're not wearing typical gambler Damon Runyon type of clothing. They're not driving in huge Cadillacs. They don't have dolls under their arms. They're not unusual looking people. They are just fellow mortals like yourselves. Now, what is the difference? I don't say that I'm assuming that you're all looking. Kenny Rogers here going to be a winner. See, the great stars come to these conventions too. Bill Gollins does it. How many others in here that I don't, you're doing, aren't you, Cecil? There's a man doing it. Elliot, are you doing it yet? Elliot's doing it. I can remember when Elliot couldn't pick his nose, if you'll pardon the expression. The lady back there in the red does it. P.J. Santerre from Seattle. Her buddy is supposed to be with her tonight. Where's he? Probably playing blackjack, yeah. Well, he loses it all back. We won't say he does it. Bruce Jorgensen does it.
You'll meet him tomorrow.
And there are none of us, except for myself and Jim the Hat, of course, and Tom Brohammer, none of us are unusual. And even us, even we don't try to be unusual until you catch us at it. No, it's a very mortal, very common thing to win. In fact, it's you medical doctors will understand this better than anybody else. It is the normal state. It is man following his nature and not fighting nature. It is natural. It is the natural order of things to succeed. The disorder of things is when you fail at that for which you strive. That is a disease, because it causes dis-ease, a lack of ease. Now that is the essence of this methodology. The methodology is not a mechanistic, mechanical, numerical series of formulae. The method is getting into your head and having you get it into your head and your heart and your very sinews that it is right and natural and in tune with the cosmos when you win, and it is out of tune. It is a dis-ease when you fail to win, and let's examine that before we get into any of the mechanics. We are a holistic body. We are a part of the atom, we're a part of the river, a part of the sky, a part of everything. The moon is our left eye, the sun our right eye. We are part of the universe. And the universe survives because of harmony. When we lose, we are out of harmony. We have then a mental cancer. How many of you have inflicted upon yourself the disease of not succeeding at this endeavor to which you strive because you have allowed your mental state to come up with bad messages which you believe in and which are not true? Let me give you a few. My track is tougher than any track in the country. How many of you think Yakima Meadows would be a tough track where they have $3,000 claimers and the surface has little pits in it once in a while? And how many of you ever heard of Yakima Meadows to begin with? Here's a man who wins the Yakima Meadows and at Spokane. Mr. Oshinero, stand up. Here's a man who once could not win and now is a steady winner and makes his living at this. Is he any different from any of you? Where's Fritz? Dick, stand up. Dick Fritz, how many of you ever heard of Playfair in Spokane? This man wins at Playfair. You've seen his records in the follow-up. Average mutual, $12.50. Average win, 58%. Wins 5.8 races. How do you win 0.8 races, anyway?
He's got one.
5.8 races out of every 10 at $12.50. And not only did it a few times, but he did it 420 races in a row in Spokane, Washington. What have these people learned? They have learned the habit of winning and got over the habit of losing. Losing is a habit pattern. It is a conditioned response. And how do you get to be that conditioning response? You say things like, my track is tough, you can't win at my track. Or I can win at on tracks where it's early, but I can't win at Del Mar or Saratoga because they do things with the track to make it strange. How many of you said Gilder is saying this? In this game, you are bound to have losing streaks. Hands. How many of you never said it? That's more like it. Oh, there's one. Good for you. Folks, that is a conditioned response. You are not bound to have losing streaks. You have been told by authors that you've read or persons that you have heard repeated ad nauseum, you're bound to have losing streaks. You're only bound to have losing streaks if your DNA is conditioned and has a world view of having losing streaks. It's all in your view whether you'll have losing streaks or not. When you bet two horses a race, you will not have losing streaks if you have a healthy mental set. Now, you've got to understand that in a beginner session of this methodology or any session of this methodology, the essence of the methodology is for you to change your mental imagery, you change your worldview, and consider yourself as healthy only when you are winning. That it is not a disease from without when you lose, it's a disease from within. How many of you believe that you don't play fillies and mares, three-year-old fillies and mares in low-class claiming races because you can't win them? How many of you are blind? How many of you play fillies and mares, low-class claiming races, with the same impunity that you play anything else? Good. Good. There's been some progress. I hear it all the time from the experts, the acknowledged authors. You can't make a living playing those low-class claimers. Now, there's a man from California, a good friend of Tom Brohammer's, gets written up in books, but had to move to Seattle because his wife had a job there, and being an expert, he needed a wife for the job. And I said, he would go and do anything to play Southern California tracks by satellite or anything. And I said, why aren't you playing Yakima Meadows? And he looked at me with total indignity. Very famous name of this biz. I would never mention his name. But you know he is, probably. He wouldn't play Yakima Meadows because that's a cheap track. How many of you are imbued with the idea that if it's a cheap track, you won't play it? Do you know the people in West Virginia and Pennsylvania and up in Connecticut and everything will try to do anything to play Hollywood Park, where the mutuals averaged $7.20, and eschewed their own track where the mutual average was $11.80? Because, oh, you've got those class horses out there. Yeah, we got a lot of people out there who know those class horses and reduce the mutuals. You've got to look at this thing in a realistic point of view. You've got to reassess it. How do you do that? You stand back and you do a little visualization of yourself. Separate yourself from your body and look upon yourself as a third entity. And listen to your prejudices and listen to the misinformation that you have received and stored over the years. Misinformation which has affected your attitude. And you will find that if you objectively survey yourself, you are putting out a lot of contaminated messages. Ask yourself where you got those contaminated messages. And 8 to 5, you got them out of some book by some expert. Every time somebody told me they just won 60% of the races, I said, quit and write a book. That's what all the other authors did. The reason you get this message that you can't win on low-priced fillies and mares is that most authors can't win on those. Do you realize that if you only play what they call playable races, you'd be getting the same races that anybody could get? How many of you have a fixed notion of what constitutes a playable race? How many of you avoid low-class claimers, mixed distances, any number of things which supposedly are taboo and only play those kinds of races. But high-class claimers are allowance races, which anybody can win. My granddaughter can win those kinds of races. The secret of this success in this is your ability to play virtually any race in which every horse has a couple of North American running lines and be able to win it with a degree of consistency. Where do the high mutuals come from? Do they come? They come from those races that are supposedly non-playable. If you're going to be a handicapper, then you have to be able to win at any race, virtually any kind of race where each horse has at least two North American running lines. Now let's get to the mechanics. We've gone through the psychology crap, as people are wont to say. Let's get down to some of the mechanics. What is the difference between this method and many others out there? In the beginning, there was a lot of difference. Now 90% of them are just carbon copies. People have stolen us blind. And we have tried to move on a little bit ahead of those who have stolen us so we can keep our promise and be 5 years ahead of the rest. And believe me, it's not easy. In today's mass market communication, you know, it's amazing. The method can be 5 years ahead of the people, but it's never more than 2 weeks ahead of the pirates. These guys have an uncanny ability and an uncanny lack of morality, an uncanny lack of a desire to have successfully created something of their own. This is a very non-creative business. It is a business filled with liars and thieves, and it is wonderful to go out and be able to win in a business like that, because you are succeeding in an area which has been dominated for since the beginning of this century by persons who were somewhat less than moral. That's the only unfortunate thing about it. This is really a wonderful moral occupation, and yet some people have to come in and screw it up. What could be more Christian? What could be more Christian? What could be more absolutely, almost like a religious mysticism than to go out and work in a field where only the correct are rewarded? The pari-mutuel system is democracy in action. It's Christianity in action. It's Buddhism. It's anything that's good. Because it says you are the same as everybody else. You have just as much opportunity as anybody else, regardless of your color, your stature, your sex, anything about you. If you make the correct decision, you will be rewarded. If you make the correct decision, the pari-mutuel system, blinder than the blind justice that stands in the harbor, will reward you. And if you're blind or deaf or something, you can still get your payoff. It is very democratic. And yet there are people in it who have tried to take this marvelous, most democratic of systems, the pari-mutuel system, and corrupt it. We deserve to be rewarded if we are correct, so let's all be correct. But where do we differ? A, most handicapping methods that you've experienced before you came to us were what we call static. Now let me get a little, since a lot of you are newcomers, let me get a little index as to where you're coming from. How many of you, before you joined us, were strictly speed handicappers, final time handicappers? Not very many hands. Are you just shy, or is that truly the... You can go all the way up. How many of you were class handicappers? Still not very many hands. How many of you were figure handicappers? Were you employed some measure of pace along with your speed? Well, that's only 10% of the room has raised their hand for all the... What the hell were the rest of you? Somebody tell me, please, don't be shy.
Throwing darts,
yeah, that's good.
Very confused.
Okay. But what was your answer?
Very confused.
Very confused. All right, in other words, a lot of you were not really trying to be handicappers at all before. We usually, over the years, have been the court of last resort. Everybody tried everything else beside us and then very reluctantly came to us because they couldn't make the other ones work. Because we don't pull any punches. We tell you this is not an easy How many of you have bought Easy Systems where you don't even have to read the racing form? You have something to do with it? A man of your stature?
Before you know, I met you.
20, just 10 minutes a day and you can win it. And boy, and you believe it, huh? Guarantee you $350 a day, your money back, and then the guy was not there the next day. Folks, you're all too bright. You're all too bright. And you have accountants. How many accountants? Oh, no accountants, that's trivial. Nobody will admit it, you mean. How many lawyers? 2, 3, 4, 5 lawyers. We know about the doctors. How many engineers? Boy, this man just built the pyramid over here. This is Menzies III. This man just built the pyramid. It took time off to come over here. You're lucky they didn't bury him. The last guy that built one of those, you know, they buried him in there.
Nip and tuck all the way.
Yeah. How many of you think you have a sense of humor? Okay, let's all stand up then. Here's the first thing you've got to learn if you're gonna get into handicapping seriously. You have to learn how to laugh. So let's laugh.
Come on, laugh. Let's hear it. Laugh.
Sit down. That's what you gotta learn to do, folks. You are, tell your aunt Sarah, your uncle Charlie, or your friends at the office that you're aspiring to be professional handicappers, huh? Good for you. Good for you. How many of you put the racing form inside the Wall Street Journal when you go to work? There you go. Stanford, MBA. We're all told, anybody deny that they got the message at one time in their life that gambling is evil and all gamblers lose? Anybody did not get that message? That's all right. If you didn't get it, there's always one in every group. How should you know didn't get it?
My dad was a nice one.
Good for him. That doesn't always, sometimes that's a bigger stigma, though, because the mother usually tells you your dad's no damn good. Did your mother tell you your dad was no good?
No.
No, she didn't? How about your grandmother?
Yeah, you? A little bit.
Okay. Someone told you, see? I thought we could get one, but you can't really get one. We all got that message. It is the Judeo-Christian message. Did you ever get that message, Sam, in a Japanese family? That gambling was evil and all gamblers lose?
That gambling was evil?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I was talking
to
a Christian also.
Christian, yeah. Well, but I mean, in Japanese culture, do they feel that gambling is evil?
And everything that I've seen is portrayed that way.
Uh-huh. I think it's pretty universal. It's certainly in Judaistic and Muslim, and I don't think that, you know, Buddha never did know anything about gambling. But it is pretty universal that gambling is evil. Now, why is it evil? It is evil because it is a wasteful activity. It is evil because instead of following the ethic of work hard, and justify yourself in the eyes of God who worked to make you. Not very hard from what some things I see going on in society now. He didn't have much effort in that. And if you don't, if it comes easy, hey, that's evil. You know, like the Jewish mother says, my son, the stockbroker, he handles $20 million a year. What a boy he is, marvelous boy, goes to the grindstone all the time. Lives in a little flat with his wife and four children. They're hoping maybe they get enough money someday to get a home of their own, and each kid can have a bedroom. I'm so proud of him. My son, the gambler. Look at him. Closet full of suits. Big mansion. Girls all around. Cadillacs. He's got $1 million in the bank. What a bum! That's the Judeo-Christian ethic. Those to the grindstone just barely make it. You'll go to heaven and you're good and you're noble, but you do something like we're striving to do and you succeed at it and you show some of the rewards and you're a bum. And that's society's, the way society looks at it. I wrote some articles and got into some of the journals, the psychiatric journals from my work, and a fellow psychiatrist I used to know called me up and he said, did you know there's somebody using your name who's actually working with horse players? Why don't you do something about that? And I said, look, I got news for you. We're frowned on. Now, that should make you angry enough to rise up and say the hell with them and thumb your nose at them and prove that you're a winner. How many of us though succumb to this negative message and kind of get a guilt feeling? What is the first word you use when David Barrios tells you how to use the Kelly criterion, how to make, like he does, an easy 1,000 a week on a bad week when you can't go every day, and 2,000 or 3,000 on good weeks? What's the first thing people say is, they use the word, but I'm afraid, and you don't have to go any farther than that, but I'm afraid, and there's the answer, fear, anxiety. Well, every time you do something which is not socially approved, which is not socially acceptable, this thing that is loosely referred to as gambling, you get an anxiety neurosis. How many of you have won 15, 13, 14, whatever races in a row and felt the desperate need to lose? I'll raise my hand first, because I have. Tom Brohammer has. That's a natural function. The anxiety builds up in you that you will not win, and then when you win, the anxiety builds up within you that you'll stop winning, and so you force it by losing. It's a habit you create and build up. Why? Because, anybody got the answer, why do we look upon this in this field and not in when we practice law, accounting, engineering, or medicine? What's the difference? No one wants to venture? We think it's gambling. How many of you externally will say, oh no, it's not gambling? How many think it's really not gambling? Not as many as usual. You are newcomers. How many of you definitely think it's gambling? And how many don't want to admit either way? It is not gambling, folks. Gambling is going on out there right now. It is not gambling if you do the work essential to keeping it from being gambling. If you approach it as gambling, then it is gambling. But this is a positive expectancy, stochastic event. Gambling is getting in your automobile and driving them down the street out of here. Gambling is living in Los Angeles and driving the freeway, and it's getting to be that way in Seattle too, San Francisco. That's gambling. And this stuff out here is gambling. We can demonstrate to you, and we have, I think, in our written material, that there are any number of ways in which you can not lose in horse racing. Playing certain odd ranges, there are all sorts of mechanistic ways to not lose. It is a positive expectancy event because you have enough statistical data on what does win so that you won't lose. Now, I keep saying won't lose as opposed to win. Why? Because if you can break even, that is the biggest hurdle that you'll face in this endeavor. You're not losing, and so you have nowhere to go but up. Now all you have to do is get a slight edge, and you'll be a winner. And that's where the mechanistics and the methodology come in. We spent years and years and years with hundreds of thousands of races with people like David Barrios and Spencer and Tom Brohammer and Marion Jones and all the others, supplying us with race after race after race, testing the various formulae in computers and before computers on handheld calculators to determine that anybody who would follow the lessons as taught would not lose and would in fact win. How much they would win in terms of win proficiency would be based on their skill level or their ability to carry it one step further on their own. How much money they would win would be based on their ability to handle that money and to bet appropriately, of which David Barrios is our resident expert, and will be very happy to deal with any of you, and will help us a little bit perhaps on Sunday to express some of these ideas, which are not really ideas, they are proven absolutes. Money management is an absolute. Handicapping is an art. Money management is an absolute mathematical procedure. and can be mastered if you master yourself. But it all boils down to what we started off with. You've got to master yourself. This is not a mechanical game. It's a psychological game. We'll give you the tools where you can win more than you lose. What you do with those tools is totally up to you. We'll give you support. We'll give you help. Phone calls, personal help. But it still depends on the individual to take that ball from the quarterback and run it down the field for a touchdown.